This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 888-429-5471. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com. Navigate to Station 2. Click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with a call-in question for our guests toll-free. USA, Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Steve Pachanek. He is a former assistant secretary to the Secretary of State throughout four different presidencies, dealing with resolutions of international crises, dealing with hostage situations, also assisting in overthrowing governments. He's also an author of a book called Psychopolitical Thriller, and a co-author of Tom Clancy's book, Net Force, which is on the New York Times best-selling list. Dr. Steve Pachanek, welcome to the room. And sorry, to the people speak.
Yes, go ahead. Let me just correct it. I was a deputy assistant secretary, which is a little bit lower than the assistant secretary. So I thank you for promoting me very quickly. But basically, I report to the different secretaries of state, Kissinger, Vance, Schultz, and Baker. That's correct.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, it was interesting, but please ask.
I can only imagine. Well, we've got a wide spectrum of questions for you this evening. I'm sure the audience is going to want to call in and also ask a lot of questions. I don't know if we'll have enough time, but hopefully we'll have you back again at a later date. Steve, what's going on?
What's going on right now is that it looks as if we have a confrontation between the United States and Russia. What's really going on is that Russia moved in or, in effect, declared the autonomous region of the Crimea to be within the sphere of Russian influence. Historically and politically, that is correct. What we have done in return and without any request or without any imperative is the United States government, while the Sochi Olympics were going on, we prepared what was called non-governmental organizations or NGOs with titles like Freedom, Freedom House, Democracy. We prepared a group of agitators in Poland, Lithuania, and elsewhere to come into the Ukraine to start agitation for what we call in the propaganda field agitprop, to start repercussions in political agitation in the Ukraine on the western part in order to destabilize the government and pull it away from what's called the near abroad or the Russian influence. That was a big mistake. From a strategic point of view, from a tactical point of view, there was no reason to do that on our behalf or on behalf of the EU or on behalf of Poland or Germany, because at that particular point through November, through the Sochi Olympics, Putin was very much engaged in putting together the Olympics, as many have seen. And at the same time, we had no end goal. We have not had an end goal for the past 10, 20 years, and consistent with our arrogance and ignorance as led by our foreign policy leaders and presidents, including Clinton, including Bush Jr., and now Obama, we're headed in a very dangerous direction of intrusions into legitimate governments, provoking unrest, and then backing off, and then have resolutions of anarchy in the specific states. With regard to the Ukraine, we put in a temporal president. The Ukraine is basically a failed state. It has been the transit point for the Russians or the Soviets for over 20, 30, 40, 50 years, at least since I was involved in the Soviet Union and the takedown. All the gas pipelines, the oil pipelines go through Ukraine, through the Kiev, and into Western Europe. Western Europe depends on these oils. Ukraine depends on it. Ukraine was highly subsidized by Putin to the tune of $15 billion. We decided, whoever we is within the White House, whether it's the National Security Advisor or the DCI, Director of the CIA, to start provoking unrest, civil unrest, and the outcome is a very dangerous outcome, which is a confrontation between two forces and two major geopolitical desires, one on behalf of the United States to surround the Russia, on the other hand of Russia, to make sure that it has no enemies on its borders.
Dr. Steve, my question to you is, who are the people that are writing these strategies and foreign policies that are making us go to war and wanting to, you know, just go out and annihilate other countries and take over their resources? I don't understand. Who is, I know Obama, Bush, they're mostly puppets. I know Bush is a little bit more evil, him and his father, with their own business agenda in mind, but who's really behind the stages?
Well, the people, these are not necessarily totally puppets, with all due regard. We go back all the way to Bush Jr. Bush Jr. was not totally a puppet. He was born and raised in the CIA. His father, I worked for his father. Everybody knew he was in the CIA. Within that a delegation of authority within the Bush administration, you had the neocons, people like Steve Hadley, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Cheney, well-known people who wanted to precipitate a war against Iraq. They created 9/11. I mean, most people understand that now. They created a fictitious enemy like Saddam Hussein. We went into Iraq. We found no war weapons of mass destruction. We then had another nonsensical enemy, Osama bin Laden, who then had Marfans. And then the transition occurred as a reaction to so-called Iraq invasion, Afghanistan, where we lost. We were depleted. We've killed 300,000 people. And then it transferred to the Democratic Party. Now, in principle, it sounds as if we have two different parties and two different associations, which are in contradiction to themselves. We do not. Basically, they rule from the same background. It's not necessarily the Council on Foreign Relations, but the people within Obama's retinue are well-known people. John Brennan was DCI or CIA director. He worked for the CIA. He worked for the CIA under Clinton. He worked for the CIA under Bush Jr. He worked now as the CIA under Obama. You had Donlan, who was a speechwriter, not a significant player in the Clinton administration, then in the Carter administration when I was there, McTiernan, who was a speechwriter, and Susan Rice, who was a well-known assistant secretary for Africa. And then you have Samantha Power, who was a do-gooder and a woman who ran around the world talking about genocide. But in effect, they all believed in interventions into foreign governments. Their basic principle, including Bush and Obama, very simply was we would get rid of dictators, as in Egypt. We would get rid of Gaddafi in Libya. And now we would get rid of the Russian influence, Putin, in the Ukraine, in the name of democracy, in the name of freedom. What was at hand and a concern was really part of what we call the military-industrial complex. And it's not just simply money, which was an issue, and the economy and stability, but it was to have stability in the name of the United States government. And in fact, what had turned out was it was a disaster. Libya was a disaster. It was attacked by NATO, which is just a front group for the U.S. Military. We did not do well. We took out Gaddafi. He escaped down to Chad. We went into Egypt. I had been part of the group that put Mubarak in and had worked with Sadat. Mubarak had kept the government going somewhat corrupt, as most autocratic governments go. He was overthrown. Then we put in a CIA asset. It was Morsi, Mohammed, the Islamic Brotherhood. He was then overthrown. Then came the military again. So what we see is a repetition of mistakes, ignorance, and arrogance from a group of people who are vested in living in Washington, D.C. The label Republican and Democrat has nothing to bear with their ideology. All they care about is the moment that they get into a point of power or position of power, either in the White House, State Department, or the CIA, or 16 other of our intelligence organizations, which are also military intelligence, and then begin to implement some kind of theoretical notion. The 9/11 group came out of what's called the American Century Group. It was a group created by Cheney, by Rumsfeld, by Jeb Bush, by Zalmay Khalilzad, and then you had neoconservatives who took it over, and then you had the liberals who also reflected people like Samantha Power, Susan Rice, Hillary Clinton, all of whom thought that American imperialism in the form of ideology and freedom and liberty was a righteous cause. And in fact, what happened is we created a catastrophe, and we're now adrift. And we have secretaries of state like John Kerry who have no idea what they're doing. It's not comparable to either Kissinger, who was in part a problem with Vietnam, but it's not comparable to Baker or Cyrus Vance, where you have dignity, you have a sense of purpose, you have a sense of quiet elegance in terms of dealing in diplomacy, and you don't talk about the Clean Air Act, homosexuality, and at the same time threatening Russia, as Kerry has done. And in the same way, you don't have people like Rumsfeld who are threatening war games all over the world. So what you have is a collection of these power-hungry, arrogant, ignorant individuals who've been around Washington, the think tanks, the Brookings, the Rands, the Wilson Center, all these centers that are basically, I consider, welfare institutions for those who are out of power or want to be in power, and then their turn comes. And irrespective of the label, they want to impose their narcissistic identity into history and into the foreign policy dialogue.
And what relevancy does AIPAC have in all of this? Because I know it seems like Netanyahu is persistent to push us into a war with Iran. Then I read stories that he's selling weapons to Iran out the back door. So
AIPAC is a organization that was created, as you know better than I, by Jewish Americans in order to support Israel. Now, AIPAC has been disproportionately more powerful than the actual representation or numbers of Jews in the United States and the world. The reason for that has been that, believe it or not, in many war games that I played with the military, the greatest supporters of Israel are not the American Jews. Only less than 71% of American Jews believe that the United States should support Israel now. That's a very interesting statistic, but the fundamentalists, what we call the Christian fundamental evangelical groups, are the greatest supporters of Israel. AIPAC has made agreements with that over 20 to 30 years ago when Jerry Falwell said we have the moral majority. And what they in fact wanted, and it was clearly stated in the American Century Project of 91 under Cheney and Bush Jr. and Rumsfeld, was that America and Israel were to be the dominant forces in the Middle East, taking over both Iraq, then Afghanistan, Syria, and eventually Dubai and Saudi Arabia. So what would happen, according to AIPAC and the neocons, was that we were to reverse the course of the English Empire, which created Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and various other elements. But now, this president is not as sensitive to AIPAC as one would think, and Bibi is, quite frankly, in a lot of trouble, both domestically and overseas. Bibi can't have an atomic war. He will not have a war. The Israeli army is not equipped for a war. Strategically, the Israeli army, the last war it won, was really 67-72. It failed miserably in southern Lebanon, against Hezbollah, which was a formidable group of only 800 fighters on southern Lebanon, and over about 900, 1,000 Israeli soldiers were killed in guerrilla warfare. So Israel cannot fight a war as it had in the past. It cannot attack Iran. It doesn't have the strategic and tactical capability. And basically, as you know, the Jews have always prayed to Darius and Cyrus the Great for freeing them in Babylon. So the issue in the narrative of Bibi is just relating to Bibi. He has no influence now in terms of any consideration vis-a-vis Iran. What he has done in reverse is to align himself even more strongly and now openly with the Soleimani brothers, or the seven sons of Soleimani in Saudi Arabia. He has aligned himself with the United Arab Emirates, and with Jordan. And so his alliances have shifted, but so have ours. We needed Iran. Iran helped us through the Afghanistan war, albeit it was pitiful for us to go to war. Iran allowed us and our military to literally go through Iran right into Afghanistan, and we had to pay Putin some money in order to have the privilege of fighting. So the storyline that Bibi gives and the storyline that AIPAC gives is totally false. The only countries that have any bombs that could affect anybody is really Pakistan, which is not a failed state. It's controlled by the ISI, which is the Intelligence Service Agency, created by our CIA, and it has had more military coups than any other country. And that's the one country that's destabilized, but that will not go to war with Israel. So Israel is in a position to absolutely do nothing. It will not grant a treaty. It will not be in peace. But we basically marginalized Israel. 2 years ago, a general who I admire, Petraeus, David Petraeus, said very clearly and outwardly that Israel is a strategic liability. AIPAC has tried to fight against it. American Jews have not responded or cared about it. And basically, Israel knows it's kind of the little child that's holding on to the father's hand. But we will not come to any rescue.
Well, in my speakings with a lot of Israelis, they always pull out the Samson option of using nukes and things of that nature, which I think is detrimental to themselves and everybody else. But
let me talk about the atomic. You know, everybody knows Israel has an atomic weapon. Can they use it? Yes. Will they use it? No. There is no Masada complex. That's all very nice for the narrative, but the reality is that Israel knows two things. Number one, it's become an incredibly strong technological state, which has a lot of assets to really offer to the Palestinians, to the Jordanians, to the Saudis, to Syria. Secondly, contrary to what everybody says, and including Bibi, and I have been intimately involved with this, Israel hasn't fought the Syrians for over 30, 35 years. So we've had peace there. Thirdly, the Israeli army is in no position to do anything that they would like to have done. They cannot fight strategically, just empirically, a 2-3 front war as they did in 1948. So that issue is really not the major issue of today. The major issue of today is the Eastern European countries, Russia, and our shift to Eastern to Asia. It's not the Middle East.
Okay, great. I have a question from Rudy in New York. If exposing a false flag operation of 9/11 were a business, what strategy would you most employ, and what point of focus would you foment to achieve the goal of a total success and victory?
I'm not clear. Is he asking me what I would do if this? It was a 9/11. Was a false flag, as I've said. I know this from my experience because I'd often teach false flags at the War College, but also some of the people who were involved told me. Is he asking me how to do this or how to hold people accountable? My position is very simple. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
My position is very simple. For 13 years, Americans now 53%. Know very well that 9/11 was a false flag initiated by Cheney, by Powell, by Condoleezza Rice, by Bush Jr. Unless we have a Nuremberg-like trial and not depend on our legislators or an independent group like that nonsense 9/11 commission and really bring in independent prosecutors that have been chosen by the people of the United States to interrogate not only the people who've been involved, Steve Hadley, Condoleezza Rice, Paul Wolfowitz, his whole group, and you will find that it's right there, the whole elements, also the generals who've been involved from NORAD, the FAA, as well as the FBI. Mueller knew a lot, and he's resigned, as well as the members of the Secret Service who are protecting, whose job is to protect the presidency, but also whose job is to stay loyal to the Constitution, and I feel strongly that they violated the Constitution, as did the FBI. We will not have the kind of truth and advancement that we need as a so-called democracy. Until that day comes, and hopefully it will come someday, we will always go with the narrative, oh, yeah, it happened, but there's nothing we can do. So from my point of view, I have started 14 years ago, in 2001 to basically say, look, I know this is a stand down. I know this is a false flag. This is who did it. This is who was involved. Israel was co-conspirator, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. But you're not going to blame three Saudi, so-called terrorists whose passports were found on the ground. So until America turns upon itself and says this is enough, both the Republicans and Democrats were involved, including Clinton and Sandy Berger, we're not going to continue. And then we will just go around in a false narrative.
Okay, let's move on to another question, pretty much down the line of 9/11. Mike in California wants to know what you, if you think that there is anything that can be done to change the direction of America's economic policies, foreign policies, etc. In other words, do the American people have a chance of changing anything outside of a full-blown revolution?
That's an excellent question. You know, I thought about that. Yes, I'm very optimistic about what's happening to America now, thanks to that question and what you're asking me. And the answer is, we have always been born of one trait that no other country had, and that's the ability to be basically entrepreneurial and to change very quickly and to implement that change in business, in economics, and philosophy. The entire notion of the American Revolution was really based on the individual's right to be supreme over the state, and that I still believe. In order to do that, what we have to do is relook at a constitution. We can no longer have 400 and some odd ridiculous congressmen representing every little district of the United States who are pork barreling. We can no longer have senators who sit there for 12, 18 years doing absolutely nothing, but absolutely nothing. I've treated senators, I've treated congressmen. It's a waste of our money and our time. And it's time for us to break this nonsense of a Republican and Democratic Party. And from the grassroots, this question is excellent, and it's true of all of us in America. That's why I wanted to speak to you and your wonderful group, is that we have to start at the grassroots to start a third party, not a Tea Party, which was co-opted and talks about Jesus and abortion at the same time that we talk about less government. The basis of America works on the lowest denomination of control from above. And what we need, in effect, is to break out to different little groups, starting from the basic, from Texas, California, to Florida. And what we need is to get rid of a lot of the federal institutions, not just eliminate them, but basically vote them out. In a revolution, we have the Internet. You don't need guns. We have the Internet. We can flood their offices. We can flood everything they have and stop them from working. There are departments that are absolutely absurd. Homeland Security. We don't have enough terrorists to have Homeland Security. That whole nonsense that was created about terrorism. We don't need 732 bases in 223 countries, and we don't call ourselves American Pax Americana. We are an empire. But in order to stop that empire, and in order to stop the notion that we're getting grandiose and awkward, we have to go back to our roots of being initiating a third party, a fourth party at the local level, not co-opted by Republicans or Democrats, big money, and then start to get legislators at the local level, commissioners, mayors, and governors, and begin the devolution of federal power. You know, I've worked for five presidents, and I must say, for Nixon, Bush, Reagan, Carter, and all, each one had their strengths, each had their weakness. But the one thing I noticed as a psychiatrist and somebody who was operational, after 100 days, we don't need a president. Obama right now doesn't know what he's doing. It's not that he's stupid or ignorant. He doesn't know. They just don't have anything to do. But what we're doing is we're funding somebody up there to run around and posture and make believe they're making decisions. This was true of Bush Jr. This was true of Clinton. This is true of most of the presidents I worked for. After 100 days, we don't need the presidency. George Washington warned us of that. So what should happen is a devolution of power as we increase our local power, increase our number of parties that get involved into the constitutional rights, decrease the number of congressmen and senators that are there, and devolve many of our institutions that really have no legitimacy. Homeland Security, the Secret Service is out of control, our CIA is totally out of control, our military budgets are out of control. If you think of it, we have not won a war since 1944 on combat. We lost Korea. We lost Vietnam. We lost Iraq. We lost Afghanistan. So you have to reconfigure all of these issues in terms of saying, can we change our country? The answer is definitely. How do we do it? We get people in at the local level, at the level of commissioners, at the level of governors, who say, you know what, we're going to start spending our money on infrastructure, roads, education, and health, and get rid of what we have to supply at the higher levels, which is totally worthless. The people that you have up there are basically sociopaths. What that means is they're there because they want to be there. They love power. They don't care about America. It doesn't matter whether Republican, Democrats, liberal, or whatever. We don't need that. That's not how America was based. That's
great.
What I would say.
I've got a question from Washington, D.C. A lovely young lady by the name of Jen wants to know, we've heard you say that Osama bin Laden died of Marfan syndrome. A separate account by Benazir Bhutto stated that he was killed by Omar Sheikh. And do you know what the extent of this could be? Or is it true
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Was it Marfan? Was it Omar Sheikh? Or?
Well, I'll tell you this. First of all, I knew Benazir Bhutto. We went to school together at Harvard. I wouldn't trust anything, and I've written it before. I don't particularly like her. I knew her socially and academically. We had social psychology together. Benazir Bhutto has been nothing but a sociopath, liar. Her total history was one of continuous lies and promoting a very crooked family. I dealt with the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Yaqub Khan. I was involved indirectly. Her father was killed by the Pakistanis for being totally corrupt. Her husband was put in prison for 11 years in a corrupt society for being corrupt. She was indicted for corruption, and she was thrown out. So Benazir Bhutto has no credibility. Whether she was alive or dead, she had none. I happen to have known the medical records of Osama bin Laden because we knew in the intelligence community, many of us, I'm a physician, that he had Marfan syndrome. And you can recognize it from the picture where he has kidney dialysis and his number two man is Elzwahiri. Well, it's not an accident. Elzwahiri was a physician. And you've got to remember, they came here in the 91. Elzwahiri came here on behalf of Pakistanis, on behalf of Al-Qaeda to solicit money. So it's not as if these guys are mystery. In 2001, in June of that year, Dr. Dewey, a physician from the CIA, went to see Osama bin Laden when he was already in the hospital, in the Anglo-American hospital in Dubai. And his record is very clear. The doctors from Cornell will tell you that he has Marfan syndrome. Long hands, disconnected connective tissue, lens that decompose, and eventually he would die. The attack on Osama bin Laden by McRaven is nonsense. It would have been the first military raid on a funeral home that I know of, and that funeral home was ostensibly located 100 feet from the Pakistani West Point. The entire narrative never made sense. To this day, they're still trying to create something that makes sense. It didn't make sense. You needed Osama bin Laden for the simple reason that you said, oh, we were against terrorism, a war on terrorism. But Bush was not very bright, neither was Wolfowitz or Cheney. The reason I know that is because I was on his team to get him elected, believe it or not. And then I just pulled out when I realized that they were looking for trouble. The Pentagon was saturated with CIA operatives, and particularly an office called Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict, especially Paul Wolfowitz. They were all CIA operatives. And some of them came back to me and apologized and said this was a standout. Well, there was no excuse for it, but he had definitely had Marfan syndrome. And the absurdity, America has to think, how do we go to war with two enemies? We were told Saddam Hussein is our enemy and Osama bin Laden's our enemy. Well, tell me which one's our enemy. You're sending boys to die, men and women to die in Iraq, for Saddam Hussein was our enemy and he had weapons of mass destruction, but he didn't. And then at the same time, we go in Afghanistan, but he was supposedly affiliated, Osama bin Laden was affiliated with Saddam Hussein, which he wasn't. Saddam Hussein couldn't stand any of the extremists. He was a Ba'athist. So the storyline was so stupid and self-incriminating, that's why I'm waiting for America to indict and put in prison Cheney and Bush. But instead, we're paying for the Secret Service to protect a war criminal. Think about that. We Americans are paying to have the Secret Service, which has to have its first obligation, not to the man they're protecting, but to the Constitution of America, to pay the Secret Service to protect a war criminal like Cheney and a Bush Jr., as well as Clinton. Bill Clinton was involved first using rendition against Muslims, and then Sandy Berger stole some of those records on the standout. So there's a lot that we have to account for, but we must progress, and at the same time, we must account for history. And I think that people will understand that.
Awesome. More questions when we come back, Dr. Steve. We need to take a quick break.
Thank you.
Join us back here in a few minutes with our guest, Dr. Steve Pajanik, and our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom, here on the BBS Radio Network.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBS.
Radio.com.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak. This is Brock Cash with our guest, Dr. Steve Pajanik. Dr. Steve, let's get back to where we were. So we've gone over a few things, finding out that Osama bin Laden was killed by Marfan syndrome, and of course we found out that 9/11 was done as an inside pretext to go to war against people that we didn't need to go to war against. And once again, the only tragedies to this are the children that are dying in the streets. So people like George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Powell, Wolfowitz, all of these people get richer and richer every time we go to war and we fight. So this is not any reason to send your kids into the military. Matter of fact, years ago, I used to influence kids and say it's a great thing due to the discipline and conditioning, but to send your kids in there to go to war. I feel that our military should return as a national defense force and not a national offensive to where we're going out and attacking people and stealing their resources is basically what we're doing. I think as a country here, we need to stick to our own borders and work within our own borders to make things stronger and better for the people here in our country. Not just the elitists, but the people here in our country. I'm hoping that we'll have Dr. Pechenik back here shortly. Maybe we can take a quick break, go back to a commercial until we get him on. I will be asking as many questions as I possibly can for you people that are sending in all these great questions. It's going to be an awesome thing, but we will be bringing Dr. Steve back at a later date so we can get a full hour going. Yeah, we heard that. That's a weird coincidence. Do you think it's the NSA trying to cut you off?
Well, I'll tell you. Before I think of the NSA, I'll often think of Sprint, AT&T, and every other line rather than the NSA. I think they are too busy doing other things.
All right.
They have much more important things to do than this.
Yeah, I was posing a question to you before you left, and that thing saying that Osama bin Laden died of Marfan syndrome.
Yes, he was already dead. By the time we went in there, Osama bin Laden was just an excuse. That's not the real reason.
Right, but now I want to pose a question to you about Osama bin Laden, and I want to ask you a question about the coal operation and also the Saudi embassy inside of Saudi Arabia, all these other terrorist plots that they seem to point the finger at Osama bin Laden, but it always seemed that Osama bin Laden was their man.
Well, what happens, I don't know the specifics of all that, but Osama bin Laden was an assistant. When I was involved in the war against the Soviet Union, you know, people understand that we used Mujahideen, we used the brave warriors of Islam to fight against Russia, and then they turned down. It was a blowback. Whether Osama bin Laden was behind this or that, he was a big financier. His families are still large financiers. He had very close ties to the United States CIA, to British intelligence, and believe it or not, to Israeli intelligence, too. I believe his mother may have been Yemeni, Yemenite, and made him Jewish, potentially, as it was Gaddafi. But the real story of Osama bin Laden is just a narrative that's carried around to justify the most idiosyncratic war I've ever been involved in. I've been in 8 different types of conflicts in 30 years and been in counterterrorism 30 years, and that's the so-called war on terror. It makes no sense. Terror is an emotion. It's not a strategy. There is no war on an emotion. It's like saying war on fear. You can't go around killing people with fear. And all of these drone strikes and attacks on countries that are supposedly taking out extremists, whatever that means, are nothing more than excuses for us to have exercised our arrogance, our ignorance, and our military-industrial complex and money. That can no longer occur. We're depleting ourselves. We have committed atrocities of 300,000 innocent civilians from Yemeni, Pakistan, Somalia, Sudan, and we're not very good at implementing any effective counterterrorism strategy. Counterterrorism is a psychological war. It is not a kinetic war. It's not a war of missiles against individuals or missiles against groups. It's a war of understanding, infiltration, penetration, and human intelligence, as well as some electronics. But we, in fact, have become netrocentric, which means we've depended very heavily on the Internet and very little on human intelligence, and we have not been very good at it. That's why we relied very heavily on Israel, because they have 122 different nationalities that live in Israel, all of whom can penetrate any country that you want. But the reality is that war is over for us. There is no such thing as a war on terror, and the nonsense domestically about terrorism coming to the United States.
But that's not stopping them from pushing it, though.
Well, the only thing that will stop them from pushing it is stop giving money. I mean, when people start delaying to pay their taxes, they complain, and they start saying, we don't want you as legislators, then you'll see that it hurts. But the American public has not really done their part on the obligation. With all due respect to what I'm saying, in 13 years, the American public hasn't exactly exerted its force to say, no, you cannot do this. No, you cannot have the money. No, these are not the legislator that we want. In fact, they allowed every legislator who was part and parcel of this nonsense called a republic that's happening now. We've got to get rid of it. When you have a Michael Rogers, who's supposedly head of the Intelligence Committee, and in fact has a wife who's there, who got a contract for $10 billion for Aegis, AEGIS, for protection of the State Department, which it doesn't need, then you don't have intervention. In other words, let me be frank to your audience and to me. The audience has not been responsible. The American people have not been responsible. They went on their merry way and decided they're going to vote for Obama or they're going to vote for Hillary. That's fine. When you do that, and without vetting a candidate and without demanding because you have the power of the purse, they don't, you will get exactly what we get. And I don't mean just me, I mean you, the American public. They have not shouted loud enough. They didn't ask for indictments. They didn't ask for changes in the committee. And instead, they swallowed the wafer and they swallowed wholeheartedly the storyline and said, you know what, who cares, and went on with their own life. Unless they begin to change, nothing will change. And that's what the ruling class or the ruling sociopaths who involve Republican, Democrats, Tea Party, they're all the same. They're going to continue to grab, steal, and feed themselves at the expense of our pockets. But when we start to stop paying taxes, when we start delaying in our taxes, when we start changing our legislators, and we start devolving power and having people who we can vet out completely, not the way we do it and depend on the Secret Service or the FBI, these retreads who are just disasters, then we will have a government that represents us. But unless the American public stands up and really becomes to be assertive and knowledgeable, nothing will happen. So it's a two-way street, my friend.
No, absolutely. Question for you. The IRS,
yes,
the power of the IRS, the authority they have, isn't the IRS really a private company?
The IRS is basically, I don't know what the IRS is. It's a collection bureau that, they once came to my house and the guy was disheveled and had a gun. I warned him again, if he ever came with a gun, I would shoot him. The ability of the IRS to collect money and to make sure that money's gotten for the U.S. government is strictly the ability of the American people's willingness to give it to them. In other words, the IRS can only be as good as the American people can say, you know what, I don't want to pay you. Or if I do pay you, I'm going to have a second-class economy. And that's what we've been very good at. We've had a what we call a blackmail economy or a secondary economy where cash and bartering becomes exchange. And if that continues, then the IRS becomes less and less powerful. If we demand that there is no IRS, that they do not increase the numbers, then we can force them to do it through the budget, again, and through our legislators. But if we say, oh, you can hire 16,000 IRS agents when we're not hiring physicians, then we're at fault. But the IRS is only as – I'm sorry.
We're hiring these people to come after us. Why? I don't see anything.
Well, that's what I mean. It's very self-destructive. There's no reason for it. And the reason – the people who have been hiring them and the legislators who represent should be out. And there should be a mandate to demand that we do not get more IRS agents, to demand that we want to know exactly by line item where the money's going to, where is the outsourcing going to. But we don't demand that. Instead, we have representatives who are totally co-opted in the system. The IRS, is an institution which has been totally corrupted by its own sense of power and the fact that if you violate it, you can go to prison. But in fact, they are the ones who violated many of our constitutional rights. And they have not gone to prison. The woman who testified that she came and monitored the Tea Party and other people in conservative groups, nothing's was done. There's no accountability on the Hill, Ms. Lane or whatever her name is. The truth of the matter is when there's no accountability, either for 9/11, for the IRS, for infringement of constitutional laws, no one goes to prison other than some little person you never heard of, then we don't have justice. But the American people have to demand it. It's not just Fox News or some other news outlet. It has to be that the IRS, they violate the Constitution, they violate our civil rights, they go to prison, period.
Yeah, we'll get on the case of the media in a little bit. I want to know what your thought is on the Fed.
On the Fed?
The Federal Reserve.
Well, you know, the Federal Reserve, as you know, I mean, it's an old stated aspect that it's a private organization started, you know, during the period of Woodrow Wilson. Baruch was one of its founders. Basically, the Fed is as corrupt as you can imagine. I had a comment recently. I mean, you have Janet Yellen, a woman of no great intellectual distinction, just somebody who was there and sat around and watched Bernanke, who also was a disaster in terms of understanding what the economy was doing. We don't need a Federal Reserve to buy and sell, to increase interest rates or decrease it, and then they'll sell out bonds to our investment bankers. You know, there was a guy, Steve Friedman, who was a federal on the Federal Reserve of New York. He was head of American Express. He bought stock at 94. When he knew there was a bailout, there was 104. But again, nobody was accountable. You can't have a Fed if nobody goes to prison. If no one of the big investment bankers, and I was a managing director of one of the big banks, Kidder Peabody, and we took it down $600 million for lack of accountability, irregularity. I can assure you that Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley are replete with irregularities. I could go in there and tell you that right now. But the fact is, no one is doing it. Nobody wants to hold accountable. So the Fed will continue. You have Janet Yellen and a more
keen
factor. You're going to have the Minister of Economics from Israel coming in and becoming one of the Fed members. So you have a Mossad operative coming into the Federal Reserve, and that's absurd. And that's where I find that this is a travesty of the American economy. But again, things have to be done.
I see more and more Mossad operatives coming into U.S. government, whether it's Rahm Emanuel or Bernanke or any of these other guys. As a matter of fact, there was a report that came out that a Mossad agent or a former officer is one of the people that was the pot stirrers in Kiev in Ukraine.
Well, let's be balanced out everywhere. The Mossad has a certain capacity to infiltrate different countries, whether they're undue representatives here. I can't speak for the Mossad. I've worked against them. I worked with them. But the reality is that the Mossad is just a very small group of a very small country. We have operatives from a counterintelligence point of view coming in from Russia, from France, from China. And those Chinese operatives, to me, are far more dangerous than you have Mossad, because the Chinese have set up from 4,000 false fronts, let's say in Palo Alto, to significantly more than that, 8,000-10,000 different companies that are outsourcing for the Chinese intelligence. At this point in time, what's most important in terms of foreign intelligence from the American counterintelligence point of view is the fact we have technology exploitation or transfer of technology from our country to China, to Russia, some to Israel, but not as much because the Israelis are pretty good at what they do. But the real problem is not so much the Mossad of Israel. It's really now our counterintelligence capacity, and that we're not very good at that.
Okay, I'm going to try to get in a couple of more questions from our listeners.
Sure.
Some of them have posed a few questions. Actually, one of them wants to call in, so we'll have him do that. We'll have him call in. One more question from my aspect, and that is the global elite. Is there a collaboration of the global elitists worldwide, or what do you know about that aspect of the situations that are going on, the World Bankers, the IMF? Who's plugging away at all of this?
Well, I don't know it's any one thing. I think I don't want to say it's simplistic, but it is somewhat simple. I was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations for about 20, 25 years. Quite frankly, it was as boring as being a member of the Red Carpet Lounge, which is the United Lounge. Most people think, and it's easy to think of a conspiracy or cabal of people who run the world. It doesn't work that way anymore. The interdependency between nations in terms of exports, imports, outsourcing, and non-outsourcing makes many people wealthy whom you would never know about. And it's not a Rockefeller, it's not necessarily a Saudi king or prince or anything like that. It's that now the economies flow back and forth. Excuse me. The key to understanding the economies is what exactly are you buying in these economies and who is doing better than whom? In other words, which country seems to do very well? In terms of countries that are doing very well, we are doing very well. Believe it or not, our imports have decreased, our exports have increased. We do not need to import oil anymore. We're a net exporter of oil. So our entrepreneurial capacity has really increased, while that of Europe has gone markedly down. As a failed state or failed entity of state, I would say Europe, Italy, Spain, France, Portugal, all those countries are in serious, serious trouble. So that means the EU is in serious trouble, whereas America is not. Russia is in serious trouble. Despite its assertive actions, what looks like in the Ukraine, they really depend on the price of gas and oil. If we wanted to get rid of Putin or Russia, we don't have to go into military action. All we have to do is decrease the price of oil and gas, which we can arbitrarily do. Who is we? It's not an elite group. The people in Texas, the people in Louisiana, elsewhere in Calgary, Canada, they all control pipelines. Sure. And it's fast. So the notion of a conspiratorial group controlling the world is antiquated. It doesn't exist anymore. I'm sorry.
Okay, another question for you is, why is the U.S. government buying millions of dollars of ammo and building tunnels underground and also FEMA camps, things of that nature?
I don't buy that. I lived in Montana. We buy ammo, but the ammo was run out. There are no FEMA camps. The FEMA camps, whoever thinks they are there, that's up to them. But the bottom line is FEMA didn't work. FEMA didn't work in Sandy Hook. FEMA basically doesn't work in general, let alone in terms of trying to attempt to round up Americans. I think that's close to absurdity, because FEMA is really a dysfunctional organization, most of which is really an outsourcing entity for themselves. They want to look for jobs, and it's not going to last much longer. But FEMA couldn't even perform what it did. Underground tunnels, I mean, we had tunnels from the old days in Montana, but that just doesn't exist. Anybody who knows America and the spaciousness of America has to really think twice in terms of how you're going to round up people living in a country that's 10 days and nights worth of driving through from the east to the west coast and north and south. You're talking about a huge, huge country, and the federal government cannot control it. That's why the FBI has to depend on local policemen. Local police will not assist the federals, and the National Guards will not be instituted for local domestic affairs. So that notion has to be gone. That's part of the fear propaganda, and Americans don't have to worry about it. We also carry 365 million weapons, and I don't think anybody in the federal government seriously thinks that they're going to round up anybody. That's not a legitimate scenario.
We have 2 minutes left. I have this interesting question that I've just seen up here, and it's, what is the best hope for exposing 9/11 enough to get us to those Nuremberg trials?
Well, the best hope, that's an excellent question. It comes from the Architectures of America. There's a link where they show exactly the amount of implosion that went on in the building. Number one, the building was knocked down in 10 seconds, 10 floors. And the American Architects of America did a brilliant study, 2,300, to show that this had to be an internal job. Once you do that, you show the factual nature of the first building going down, the second and the third one, which was not even touched. You basically have the beginning of the facts that you need. Then you need a prosecutor that's independent and will force the President of the United States, not holding the hand of Cheney the way he did last time, but to go in front of a federal prosecutor appointed by the people. and basically allow it to examine again independently everyone involved, and then you will find out the stand down the false flag. It's there. But once the American public demands it, they create it, we will succeed and we can go on.
Great. Thank you for being our guest this evening, Dr. Steve Pachanik. We will have you back again shortly, if that's okay
thank
with you, sir.
Yes, I enjoyed it, and God bless your people. Thank you.
Thank you. And join us again next week on The People Speak. This is Rockcast signing out for this evening.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief of fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.